First off, cyanobacteria, also referred to as blue-green algae, is a diverse group of microorganisms that we find on golf course putting greens. It's classified in the eubacteria because of their prokaryotic bacteria cell structure. They have gram-negative peptidoglycan cell walls. They are CO2 dependent with their photosynthesis, and they are widely distributed in nearly all types of soils. So what are some problems that we see on putting greens with cyanobacteria? Baldwin and Witten identify three problems that they assimilate with cyanobacteria encroachment. The first one is surface slime mats. Now, these surface slime mats are mucilaginic mats that are produced by cells for protection. They disrupt the playing surface, and when dry, can form crust layers or microzones within the turf profile. The second problem that is attributed to cyanobacteria encroachment is microbial mats. And these microbial mats, or subsurface black layers, can clog soil pores because of the filamentous nature of cyanobacteria. The anaerobic conditions can increase sulfur-reducing bacteria populations within the golf green and can create these mat layers. The third problem that we see is reduced water infiltration. Again, the filamentous forming cyanobacteria can clog the micropores and macropores, create perched water tables, and create a wet surface. And in the picture here is a good example of a mat that is created by the cyanobacteria and increased water. Now, when they dry out, a localized dry spot or from the mucilage produced by the cyanobacteria can occur. And when water is then administered back to the green, there can be a competition for water between the plant and cyanobacteria. Recently, Treadway et al. Identified a problem called yellow spot. Now, yellow spot is a new disease found on bentgrass putting greens. It's a non-aesthetically pleasing disease, but it wasn't deemed detrimental to the turf. They attributed this disease to two species of cyanobacteria that are commonly found on putting greens, Firmidium and Oscillatoria. So what are some conditions favoring growth? Well, with cyanobacteria, wet soils is a major contributor to growth. Sandy soils, stressed turf, and bare areas are the most susceptible to cyanobacteria encroachment. And metal-contaminated soils can add to this encroachment as well. So we had three objectives with this study. First was to culture the filamentous cyanobacteria, and then we wanted to know exactly what type of cyanobacteria we were working with. We would then screen the cyanobacteria to common pesticide nutrients. So first off, in culturing the cyanobacteria, I took samples from three putting greens in surrounding areas: the Geddes U Country Club, the University of Tennessee Golf Practice Facility, and the East Tennessee Research and Education Center, all three sites in Knoxville, Tennessee. We grew these samples in standard BG11 media, which is common to cyanobacteria as far as culturing. We isolated the individual species via plate streaking, and then would proceed to place them into 30 milliliter test tubes where, as you can see, where they would grow in the liquid medium. Now, as far as molecular techniques, like I said, we wanted to know exactly what are we dealing with on golf course putting greens. We did a 16S RNA gene sequencing with cyanobacterial specific 16S primers, and we amplified 1,148 base pair fragments. We then blasted the alignment that we got back, which is a basic local alignment search tool that's online, and it compares sequences. The first hit that we had was a 97% match to this uncultured California grassland cyanobacteria. Now, this didn't help us much because it was uncultured. So the next hit that we had was Firmidium morii, and it was a 94% match to this cyanobacteria. This Firmidium morii is a filamentous mat-forming cyanobacteria, but it is what is interesting about it is that it is found in the Arctic regions. So if we look at our if we look here at our sequencing, and as we can see when we look at the phylogenetic tree, our Tennessee algal isolate falls quite well in the grouping with the Firmidia morii. Now, as I mentioned before, Oscillatoria, another species identified, is down here, which it didn't match up as well with our Tennessee algal isolate. Now, with this phylogenetic tree, we replicated 5,000 times within the program, and it gives us bootstrap values, which are the values that are attached to the outside of the brackets. So this 99 bootstrap value actually means 99%, 99 times out of, or 99% of the time, we would get these same groupings. So this was made us pretty confident to say that this species that we are dealing with is a Firmidium species. So some identifying characteristics of Firmidium species, and these pictures that I have are microscopic pictures that we took of our Tennessee algal isolate from the greens. First off, I want to point out the growth habit. Growth habit is one of the taxonomic features that we look at when identifying cyanobacteria. And we can see that the Tennessee algal isolate is grouping itself together, it clumps. And this is a common trait of Firmidium species, but also Firmidium itself can be found in single strands as well. So this was one of the traits that we looked at as far as taxonomically to try and figure out what exactly the species was. Next, we look at the trichomes, which filaments, or they were also referred to as trichomes. And the trichomes are very long and slender. That is also another trait of the Firmidium species on golf course putting greens. So next we look at the cells, and if we note, as we look down here where I have a box around one of the cells, the trait of the Firmidium species is longer cells than wider, and we saw this with the Tennessee algal isolate. Next is the sheaths. The sheaths that contain the cells are actually the mucilage that is produced for protection against the elements. And what's interesting about this sheath is that it's clear and it is very, very viable and it's very thin. All common traits of the Firmidium species, this Firmidium cyanobacteria species. So next, after we identified it, we wanted to run some micronutrient screens to this cyanobacterium that we had. We selected two micronutrients, zinc and copper, and the reasoning for selecting these two micronutrients was because they're two common micronutrients that we find in pesticide formulations. Daconil ZN zinc with chlorthalonil was one, and junction, or mancozeb plus copper hydroxide, were the two chemicals that we selected. We wanted to determine the toxicities of the micronutrients within these chemicals. So the material and methods, as far as we grew these, we grew them in the 30 milliliter test tubes, and we grew them in growth chambers that we had 1,000 micro Einsteins of light, and it was grown in 26 degrees Celsius temperature. We used zinc sulfate and copper sulfate formulations, and we tested 6 different micromolar concentrations of each nutrient. 0, 0.63, and 3.15 will be the ones that I discuss when we look at our results, because all the other concentrations we saw the same results as the 3.15. We ran triplicates of each one of these micromolar concentrations, and then what we did is we filtered the filaments with 0.02 micron filters, and we harvested at 0, 3, 5, 7, and 10 days after inoculation. We stored these samples in minus 80 degrees Celsius freezers. We then lysed the cells and measured chlorophyll A with a Turner 10 AU fluorometer. So now we're going to proceed on to the results. And first, the first nutrient or micronutrient we're going to look at is copper sulfate. And allow me to set the slide up for you. On the left, we have chlorophyll A content in micrograms per liter. And along the bottom, we have the date of harvest. And what we noticed is that between 0 and 0.63 micromolars, we saw a little bit of a difference in growth. And like I mentioned before, the 3.15 micromolar concentration of copper sulfate killed off the cyanobacteria. So it was interesting that the high rate of copper actually increased growth. We saw a bigger increase with zinc, and this as compared to the 0 micromolar concentration. Again, the 3.15 micromolar killed off the cyanobacterium. So now if we look and we compare the chlorophyll A production between copper and zinc, we can see that there is a slight difference between the copper and the zinc chlorophyll A concentrations. So we believe that it had a slight affinity towards zinc as compared to copper. So some discussion, at the 3.15 micromolar concentration, it did kill off the cyanobacteria. It was the killing micromolar concentration that we saw. Future research will look to narrow this 0.63 and 3.15 micromolar concentration. We want to see exactly where is it in there that we kill off this cyanobacterium. The Tennessee algal isolate does have a slight affinity towards zinc. Now this raises some questions with zinc applications in chlorthalonil, because potentially if it does have a slight affinity towards zinc, could we be sustaining growth in between applications? These are all questions that arise from the data that we have. Again, these are relatively low concentrations. It is tough sometimes to parallel laboratory research within the field, because again, we are spraying these pesticides by applications. They are not suspended in the copper concentrations. But just for reference, I took the copper junction, and we figured out that we were spraying junction at a 0.2 molar concentration in the field. And I will remind you that we killed cyanobacteria at 3.14 micromolar concentrations. So in conclusion, we did successfully culture the filamentous cyanobacterium. We identified this cyanobacterium as the Tennessee algal isolate, and it did have a 94% relation to this Firmidium morii, which again was a filamentous mat-forming cyanobacterium from the Arctic region. We identified the micronutrient toxicity levels, and future research will look to narrow these toxicity levels down. Again, we want to see exactly what concentration it kills, and we want to hopefully relate this to the field as much as possible. We want to know exactly how we want to parallel this research so that we can help out future superintendents with their cyanobacterial problems. And at this time, I will be happy to entertain any questions.
Any questions?
So the statement is you as far as the compounds themselves instead of micronutrients. We have at the University of Tennessee, we have looked at the chlorthalonil and junction suppression of cyanobacteria in greens. We just wanted to, as far as more environmental friendly, maybe just to look at what micronutrients or what exactly in there could be potentially causing the problems themselves, as far as like killing off the cyanobacteria. So we wanted to look at micronutrients, because in a pond setting they would use copper sulfate. Now I know that's not a bentgrass green, but it's one of the bigger things that they use for cyanobacterial to kill off cyanobacterial in ponds. It would do a lot of damage to it. But again, that was just the formulation that we used as far as copper sulfate goes, just that type of micronutrient.
Any other questions? Thank you.